the balance shifted back to talking to real people, to humans. And that's where we are today, finding ourselves in this situation where it's much more authentic and therefore much more powerful and effective when individuals within the brand communicate on social media on behalf.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by Audience Plus. Our mission is to shake out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals and stir up fresh conversation, all to help you connect your brand with the right audience at the right time. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. Jonathan Gandolf here, co-founder and CEO of Audience Plus, the host of today's episode, where I'm thrilled to be joined by Mike Alton. I think he's the first chief storyteller we've had on the podcast, so we're going to be telling some stories today. I'm excited to dig in with him. He's at Agorapulse, and they're a great partner of ours. We had Emmerich. I hope everyone got to listen to that episode a few episodes ago. It was really interesting to hear kind of his entrepreneurial journey and kind of his perspective on the space. Mike, today we're going to jump into all things social media, what it means for content, AI's influence on the topic, and I'm really excited to learn from you today. Why don't I stop rambling, though, and in your own words, tell us a little bit about your background and your path to Agorapulse.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan. This is going to be a blast. I love having these kinds of conversations. And it's funny that you mentioned Emmerich, because he's how I got involved with Agorapulse. I met him personally in 2016 at an event in San Diego, Social Media Marketing World. And at the time, I had just gone through a horrible breakup with one of our competitors. I'm not going to say who it was, but I had been blogging about that competitor for years. I'd literally written a book about them, and that relationship soured. And then I was introduced to Emmerich and Agorapulse, and I loved it. I loved him and the tool. It was amazing. It was a beautiful app, even back then in 2016. And he got me started using it. And for a couple of years, I was one of our ambassadors. We were being quote unquote managed by him, which really meant we weren't being managed, because he was the CEO doing CEO things. And he brought me on to the team in 2018 to manage our influencers. And I grew that program from 10 to 50 ambassadors and influencers, started working with affiliates and other brands. And over the past 7 years, my role has ebbed and flowed and evolved a bit as the needs of the company has evolved. So over the past year, we recognized that what we really needed was somebody in charge of the stories that we were telling, customer stories, influencer stories, whatever, that hadn't been a focus of the company. So it would just been every once in a while, somebody would be handed a project. Hey, we need more case studies. And that might last for like a quarter. And then that was it. So there wasn't consistency in the like quality and degree of stories that we were telling. There weren't really any kind of rhyme or reason in terms of whose stories we were telling. So as I've really taken that over the past year, that's been my focus, to tell more stories, to talk to more and more customers and share how they're really finding success through social media, whether we're helping them or not. That's the real key. I want to help other social media managers and marketing agencies know, how are other people doing it really? And so those are the stories we're telling.
I love that. There's such a subtle nuance. You know, I think I hear chief storyteller and I think like you talking about the Agorapulse story. But what I'm hearing you say is you're actually telling the story of your customers, your partners, your influencers. I think that's really subtle, but I think that's really important. I've been in the seat of leading a marketing team where like case studies are, they're on the priority list, but they're not the priority. People are afraid to let marketing actually talk to the customer. So then it becomes more difficult and it just stays on the list, but you don't get it done until it becomes an emergency. Like, so yeah, that's, I think it's cool to see a business like Agorapulse prioritize storytelling and not just their own story, but actually the story of their customers and partners and influencers as well. Really neat.
It's hugely important. Sales, for instance, every sales rep who's been doing it for a while will tell you that the case studies that they can share are going to be their most valuable tools for actually converting leads. And those stories have to look like the prospects they're talking to, which is one of the challenges. If you've got two case studies, okay, that's nice, but they probably don't look like most of your customers, because most of your customers, they're not going to want to put themselves in the shoes of somebody that's kind of remotely like them. They want to see themselves like identical. They want to be looking at a mirror and seeing exactly how someone like them achieves success using your solution. So it's a lot of work.
Yeah, so good. We're going to dig into all of that. But Mike, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. We always ask all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
So I've discovered something called a Wisconsin Old Fashioned. And I actually didn't know you were going to ask me this. I didn't prepare this answer, but it's like a traditional old fashioned with a good bourbon right, and some bitters and a cocktail cherry, but with some Sprite. And so it's got a little more volume, a little more buzz, and it's a little sweeter, I think, than a traditional old fashioned, and it suits me just fine.
Are you based in Wisconsin?
I am not. Okay. I've been to Wisconsin. I'm originally from Ohio, and I'm now in St. Louis.
We have some very dear friends in Wisconsin, and they introduced us to the Wisconsin Martini. Are you familiar with this?
No.
It's a domestic beer with olives in it. I don't know
why,
but it's like a very like, it's a thing in Wisconsin. And my wife loves olives, so she's been known to imbibe it or indulge in Wisconsin Martini every now and then. But so when you said Wisconsin Old Fashioned, I was like, oh no, where are we going with this? But I love that. That sounds more enjoyable to me than a Wisconsin Martini.
Right.
So yeah. I love that. Cool. Well, let's dig into all things social media. You mentioned the storytelling. I think a big part of that is like, not only the story that you're telling of your customers, but empowering your employees to know, understand, appreciate, and share that story. I shared with you ahead of this recording, I started my career at Exact Target, which was an email marketing platform. We eventually moved into mobile, social, and kind of all things digital. And I remember, you know, I remember being there when like Twitter first kind of became a thing back in the old days. You know, it was corporate. It was the corporate page, the corporate brand, the corporate voice. Like that was what really worked and resonated at that time. And over the course, and maybe you can tell me the exact timeline, but I'd say the last 3 or 4 years, it's really shifted away from that corporate voice and more empowering the individuals within a company to represent the brand and kind of for that groundswell from the individuals to build that corporate voice on social. So I think that's been a really interesting shift. I know that's something AgoraPulse helps with. How have you kind of personally thought about like navigating that, not only with AgoraPulse, but helping your customers and partners navigate that as well?
That's a really astute observation, Jonathan, because what you're talking about is basically the maturation of not only the social networks, but how us as individual humans use and perceive social media. You want to go back 5, 10 years ago. First of all, not everybody was on social media. It's kind of hard for us to really think about today. But really, if you go back, and I kind of consider myself the unofficial historian of social media because I've been documenting and studying social media since the earliest days. And so I could take us all the way back. But in, you know, just 5 or 10 years ago, there weren't a lot of people using social media. There certainly weren't a lot of influencers on social media. And when a brand went on social media, to your point, it was really interesting to us as consumers, because before that, we had no way to directly communicate with a brand. You could walk into a Target, but you're not talking to Target or anybody representing that other than a cashier, right, or a helper. So that was a really interesting phenomenon. But frankly, it didn't last. We kind of got used to that and we realized, oh, most of the time, brands kind of suck. They really don't say anything all that interesting or helpful to us overall, because it takes a lot of skill and nuance and that sort of thing to run a brand account. So then the balance shifted back to talking to real people, to humans. And that's where we are today, finding ourselves in this situation where it's much more authentic and therefore much more powerful and effective when individuals within the brand communicate on social media on behalf of the brand. Like you had Emmerich on the show, right? Yeah. He's a fantastic spokesperson for AgoraPulse, but frankly, he's really busy, too busy to be the spokesperson for the brand. So a brand like AgoraPulse needs to have other people who are active online. So Jenny Brennan is another great example from our own internal team. She's on our revenue enablement squad, and she's fantastic. She's posting at least a few times a week to LinkedIn. I don't know if she's active on other social networks, but LinkedIn for us as a brand who's basically B2B is going to be our bread and butter brand social platform. And she's regularly active there. And many of the other employees are active there. And we've got tools to help facilitate them being even more active on those social networks. So that's definitely what other brands need to be thinking about doing. How can we empower our existing employees to serve as influencers or advocates for what our brand message is? Now, that of course means you've got to know what your brand message is. You've got to know your brand story and know how to incorporate that in. And again, that might be something you want to help your employees with, but that's where it all starts.
I remember a time, speaking to the historian here, I remember there was a moment in time, and I still see some brands do this, but it's like you can tell they give all of their employees a template that they just all copy and paste, and it's like the same thing over and over again. And I think some savvier brands have moved away from that, forward-thinking brands. I love that you use the word empowering your employees. How do you balance, like, you have the message of the brand, you're going to empower the employee, but like, how do you build the guardrails to actually allow them to represent the brand, but still kind of keep it their own like personal flavor and like allow them to be themselves without like kind of breaking brand standards or doing something that you'd regret from the brand? Like, how do you just kind of build those guardrails to empower the employees, but make sure they stay within those lines?
What I like to do is first kind of segment all the employees into at least two segments, maybe three. The first segment is going to be the people that are naturally active on social media. People like myself who, you know, I'm posting to social media every single day in one way or another. I'm active on every social network. I'm just a naturally active social media user. Emmerich's semi-active. You know, Jenny's semi-active. There's other folks in our organization that are semi-active. We want to identify those folks and then make sure that they understand everything that you just talked about. What are our brand guidelines? Not everybody needs to know that, but the people who are going to naturally want to post on social media of their own accord without being asked, they should understand what are the brand guidelines, what are the do's and don'ts. And I'm not talking about like colors and fonts, because that doesn't have anything to do with social media. Right. I'm talking about what are our values as a brand? How do we typically communicate with our audience as a brand? That's not to say that you want to talk like the brand on your personal social media account, but you need to be aware of, you know, what is our message? What is our story? How do we tend to communicate? So that means maybe having some meetings, having some conversations with those individuals. And it could be one-on-one, it could be in a group setting. It doesn't have to be super formal and documented, but it does need to happen. The other segment is everybody else in the organization. That's probably going to be 90 to 95% of the employees in the organization. Those are the ones who aren't typically active on social media. And if they are, it's rare. It's on a personal, like a Facebook profile account where they're probably like never going to talk about the brand at all. Not because they don't want to, it's just not something that they normally do. For all of those, you want to provide them with very easy to execute ways to advocate on behalf of the brand. Give them a link to share, give them a graphic to share, a video to share, give them templates of not just here's what you say, copy and paste it, but give them some options so that if you send that out to 100 people, it's not 100 versions of the same post. It's 33, 33, 33, something like that, right? And of course, then you give them the freedom to edit it and say what they want. And that's something that, you know, you can actually do within AgoraPulse. That's an advocacy campaign. You send out an email to all your employees and you give them the content that you want them to share. Let's say it's a link to an announcement or a new blog post and actual variations on a post that they can just pick one and copy and paste, which means you could also do languages. Which is also really important if you're a global brand, making sure that each individual employee has that option to share the content in the language of their own audience. But that's the basic part that you want to think about is, who do I have in the organization? Who is already active to some degree on social media? And how can I work with them to make sure that they feel empowered to share on behalf of the brand and that they know what to do when they're doing it? And then everybody else, how can I help them without having to, you know, invest in expensive consultants or anything like that?
There's a really interesting parallel in there with the internal marketing that you're doing and, you know, how we traditionally talk about external marketing of segmentation, right? Like just the basics, like make sure you know kind of the segment that you're speaking to and make sure that you're tailoring your message and your marketing to that segment, whether it's internal or external. I love that lesson. I think that's really good. All right, you mentioned you're the social historian. I think this is a record. We're 14 minutes into a marketing podcast, and we haven't talked about artificial intelligence yet, our friend AI.
Oh, no.
A new record, new world record. So this new chapter of kind of social history is being written right now. Is it making it easier because of all the AI tools to help you create content, or is it making social more difficult because it's actually generating more noise? I'd be interested in your perspective on that.
Well, I love this question, and I'm going to give you the standard marketing answer, which is, it depends.
It depends. Right?
Yeah. It depends. In some ways, AI is absolutely making things easier if you know how to use it well, right? Where you can go into ChatGPT or Gemini, which is the tool I happen to use all the time, and you can ask it for help creating that content. The problem is, anybody can open ChatGPT and ask it to create them a social post. And if you give it zero context, it won't say no. That's one of the flaws that I think we have right now with artificial intelligence. It won't ever tell you no. It won't ever tell you, sorry, Jonathan, could you give me some more information, please? Because yes, I can write you a social post, but it's going to be on cat food. I don't know you. I don't know your brand. I don't know what you want me to do. And that's just the way that AI is programmed. It's designed to be particularly helpful. It will challenge you. It will push back. It will ask questions only if you give it permission to do so, which I love doing. I love, telling the AI, hey, Gemini, this is what I want to work on today. Here's the context that I'm aware of. Here's the role that I want you to be, whether it's a social media strategist or something else. Ask me questions and feel free to challenge my assumptions. And when I do that, the results are magical. Because first of all, 9 times out of 10, it's going to say, yeah, Mike, this looks great. I'm excited to help you with that because it's super friendly and helpful, right? But then it also says, I have some questions. Could you answer these 5 things for me? Who are we talking to? What are we talking about? Is there a time constraint? All these great questions that a good marketer would ask if we're talking about creating a piece of marketing copy. But it won't ask you that unless it gives you that permission. And so we're in this interesting phase where it's absolutely a helpful tool to create copy and other kinds of activities, particularly if that's not your day-to-day job, right? If your job is something else and you happen to need to create a post for social media, or you happen to need to create an email today, being able to turn to AI to get really good copy is fantastic. But if you're not armed with understanding how to use the tool and you're not customizing and personalizing it in advance so that it knows who you are, as an individual and as a business, what your goals are, I've actually gone through this exercise where I've customized my AI to have everything it needs to know about who I am, what my role is, what my responsibilities are, what my channels are, what my goals for the year are, and what my challenges are today. So when I have a basic conversation with that, we go into that conversation, it already knows who I am and what I want to do. And I wanted to help people customize the AI for themselves in that way. And I started off thinking, I'm just going to work with my AI. I have an AI chief of staff. And we would create a prompt so that other people could do the same thing. And as we dug into it, I trained it in so many different aspects, including how to talk to me, whether it should be empathetic or not, that the prompt was getting too big. So I ended up putting it all into a PDF document, and it's several pages of stuff that the AI needs to know about you as an individual. And then the prompt is just a paragraph, and the paragraph says, hey, we're going to create an AI work buddy, because that's basically what this is, somebody that you can just lean over to in the next cubicle and say, hey, what do you think about this? And it already knows you, somebody who'd be working next to you would. So the prompt is, hey, we're going to create an AI work buddy. Used the attached file, the instruction file, and ask me questions to learn about me. And at the end, print out for me, output for me, the complete set of custom instructions that I can then paste into a custom GPT if you're using ChatGPT, or a Gem if you're using Gemini, and create an AI work buddy. So I put that on theaihat.com/AI work buddy. It's free. People can download that for free. And I've been teaching folks here at AgoraPulse how to do that for themselves, because that's one of the cool things about AI. Everybody in the organization can have their own AI work buddy. And then once you do that, then when you need to create a piece of content for social media or a blog post or whatever, it becomes so much better, because the AI that you're working with now truly knows who you are and who you're trying to talk to.
I love that. I appreciate you kind of sharing how you're using it. That was going to be my follow-up question. But I think what you mentioned there about telling AI about yourself in your case, I think is really interesting. The typical use case is pulling from AI, right? And it's not putting something into AI. I shared a use case on LinkedIn actually a couple days ago, or maybe last week, that was I used ChatGPT to build a workout plan for myself. A few people asked me for the prompt, and the prompt is pretty long. They're that was a lot, but it was all about me. So it was very easy to write. It's this is my height, this is my weight, this is my goals, this is what inspires me, this is how often I can go. And that's easy. And I think that's such a good lesson of if you're struggling with a prompt, or maybe your prompt's just arbitrary and it's something that somebody else could easily replicate or also do, I think that's a good tip for everyone, is give AI more about yourself and let it adjust and be smarter because of it. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think that's really smart. I'm going to use that myself, I think, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Because every time I have a conversation with the AI, I want it to end the conversation with that context. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to retrain it every single time. I am the chief storyteller to Gorapulse. So Gorapulse right. is a social media management tool, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to have to put that in right. every single time, and I don't.
Well, Mike, we always like to end these conversations with what's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
Oh, I have a lot.
Where we have time. Start?
I think one of the most unpopular opinions that I have, and I say it that way, not because like people hate it or something like that. It's just that I see a lot of brands not wanting to do what I'm about to share. And that is that B2B marketing is truly all about relationships, and relationships take time. You can't say hi to somebody on LinkedIn and then ask them to marry you and expect them to say yes. That's just not a reasonable expectation. And yet I continue to see marketers, particularly on behalf of B2B brands, doing exactly that. They ask me to connect on LinkedIn every single day. And the first follow-up message I get from them is, hey, Mike, here's my product. Want to buy it, essentially. And they're not willing to put in any kind of time to develop any kind of relationship. And that's important because, number one, they don't know me. They don't know what my problems are. They don't know what my needs are. They don't know if I really, truly need or have any interest whatsoever in what it is that they're selling. And they're willing to just skip to the end and hope that if they connect to enough people, eventually they'll get enough people in their funnel that actually do have some remote interest in what it is that they're selling. And that's just not sustainable. And they're risking the fact that they're probably turning off people. And yep. I certainly have muted, unconnected, you know, archived, blocked many, many people on LinkedIn because that was their approach. They connected yep. with me. And it's to the point where now, you know, when I receive a connection request on LinkedIn, I'm like, all right, is this going to be real or is this going to be a sales pitch? You know, yeah. So I've been burned so many, many times. And today, even every time I make that connection, I'm still getting burned over and yeah. over again that yeah. even though it seems like that a brand that I maybe might be interested in connecting with for whatever reason, they still immediately follow that up with a sales pitch. And the real sad part is it doesn't have to be that way. They don't have to follow that up with, even if they're using automated tools, they don't have to follow it up with a sales pitch. I use automated LinkedIn tools, but I'm not using them to send pitches like that. I'm using them to do personalized connection requests and follow that up with personalized additional value-added conversations. Yeah. Like, well, I'll say something like, hey, Jonathan, thanks for connecting. Let me know if there's anyone in my network that I could introduce you to or anything else that I can do to help you. That's pretty straightforward, pretty simple. And that results in interesting conversations and next steps with the people that I connect to that maybe they'll result in some kind of business opportunity down the road. Who knows? That's what relationships are. These should be more like blind dates, right? Where you yeah. don't really know what you're getting into and you're just open to the possibilities of those relationships and you're open to the opportunities that having that relationship might unfold down the road. You're not trying to jump into the sale right away.
To combine your last two points, I think AI can scale a lot of things, but just because it can scale doesn't mean it should be scaled, right? And I think, unfortunately, a lot of brands and individuals are using AI to like scale kind of bad habits right now or like bad marketing, right? And relationship building inherently can't be scaled or, you know, it takes time, is inherently unscalable. And so to try to like growth hack relationship building with AI, it's not a strategy that I think is good for anybody. LinkedIn pitch slap is one, pitch with a P. There is one, as well as I've noticed an increase in like somebody will comment that I don't know on two or three posts in a row. And I'm like, they're just warming me up for the like inbound, like, hey, been loving your content. And that's slightly mm-hmm. better, I guess, but it's become like pretty noticeable now on LinkedIn as well. So I like your unpopular opinion there.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, there's certainly ways that we can use AI and we can even use AI to scale. We can use AI to help us identify mm-hmm. the right people to talk to for our business goals and objectives, whatever those might be. And it can help us scale the initial outreach mm-hmm. and personalize those outreach messages. But yeah, it can't be used to just automatically pitch slap to your point and scale the sales messages. Those have got to be personal. Now you can help, you can use AI to help you write personalized sales messages. Once you've built the relationship, you can use AI to point it to somebody's LinkedIn and say, hey, I'm connected with Jonathan. We've been talking for a while. Here's his LinkedIn message. I think he's ready to move our relationship to the next phase and maybe have a next discovery call. Help me craft a personalized message to Jonathan that would open that idea to him.
Yeah. Love that.
Use AI
that way. Mike, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about AgoraPulse, what's the best way to do that?
So definitely check out agorapulse.com. You can learn about our social media management tool and the advocacy feature that I mentioned earlier. If you want to connect with me personally, go to theaihat.com/connect. That's where you'll find all of my social profiles, and you can pick whichever one you're most active on, because I'm active in all of them.
Love that. We'll get all those links in the show notes. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. To all of our watchers, all of our listeners, thanks for joining us on another episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. Until next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by Audience Plus. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us at audienceplus.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.